Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
The creative industries are hopefully going to thrive in this era of technology because it's what makes us fundamentally human. In fact, I had someone joke to me the other day that they could imagine themselves in 20 years' time sitting down with their kids saying, "Now, daughter, I'd like you to make sure you study music as well as your law degree so that you have something to fall back on."
You're listening to Women Tech Charge from the Evening Standard with me, Anne-Marie Imapadon. What happens when you have a potential number one on your hands but need people to hear it? Can technology really create music that we actually like? In this episode, I'm talking to a woman who's working on these two things and many more. And she's also got one foot literally in the past and one foot in the future of music. Adjust your headphones, we're getting started. I'm sat here 2 miles south of the historic Abbey Road Studios, only 50 years after the release of the classic Beatles album of the same name, with a woman who is leading the studios into the future. Her tech incubator, called Abbey Road Red, was the first of its kind in Europe when it launched back in 2015, and is bringing together academic researchers, music tech entrepreneurs, and pioneering sounds to create the music our grandchildren will really enjoy, or maybe our children or people in between. Welcome to the podcast, Isabel Garvey, Managing Director of Abbey Road Studios.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for coming. So that was a teeny tiny intro there to Abbey Road Red. But you're manager of Abbey Road Studios and Abbey Road Red.
That is correct.
A lady of many musical hats. What's the official tagline, strapline, elevator pitch for Abbey Road Red?
Good question. The pitch is that we want to help music tech kind of accelerate and elevate itself as quickly as possible. There's a lot of really exciting technology out there. And music actually historically has been quite a difficult industry to get into and kind of break through from a technology perspective. So we wanted to go in grassroots and help and assist these businesses to make their technology a success.
And you started it. It was your initiative whilst you were running Abbey Road Studios.
Yes.
For anyone who doesn't know, I don't know if we can even ask this question. For anyone who's forgotten what Abbey Road Studios is, quick rundown, I guess, if you can condense all of that history.
We're the most famous recording studio in the world. And as you mentioned in your intro, you know, this year is the anniversary of the album, the Beatles album, the Abbey Road, that gave the studio its name. Before then, it was actually called EMI Studios, which is not a sexy title.
No.
We are a studio environment where artists come every day to record, and we have a reputation for this amazing heritage that we're very proud of, and all the artists that have been through the doors to date. But I also sit in my office and see all the contemporary artists of today running through. So, we're kind of a bit of everything. My remit in the role actually was to take this amazing studio brand and see what we can do with it to expand the appeal to music makers and to people beyond it. So we have studios where people record. There's also something called mastering, which is kind of finishing off a record. But then in the on the technology side, we have audio products, which is kind of digitized old equipment that is in the studio. We have the Abbey Road Red Incubator, which is very much targeted at the startup world. And we've built an education brand as well. So we have
the
Abbey Road Institute, which offers a diploma in engineering and production. And then we did kind of the no-brainer thing as well, which is build a store. We have a shop because we have over 300,000 people come to our crossing to try and replicate that album cover every year, and they can't come into the studio because we're a working professional environment, but we're trying to create something that at least is a bit of a destination in
the
shop.
I've seen that on TV before, but I came to Abbey Road Studios a couple of months ago, and I was kind of disappointed actually that there weren't more people trying to cross the road kind of that way, but also how many cars were on the road, given that that is something that's liable to happen at any point, people just kind of standing.
The local residents I have got used to it. Not that they love it, but they've got used to it.
They should love it. They're in the background of all those images that go around the world.
Yeah, but no, remarkably, everyone stayed very safe on that cross.
This is good. You should always look both ways. Yeah. And observe the green cross code when you do go and visit Abbey Road Studios. Yeah. So it's crazy. I think when you think of studios, technology is basically all you do there, right? Because you're there to digitally capture music that's being made.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet something like Abbey Road Red, which is bringing in the tech industry on purpose to be in that kind of environment to build their business around it, was something that was so new.
Yeah, well, ironically, it actually all bubbled up from looking back at history, because EMI, back in the day when it was kind of fully vertically integrated, they made the recording desks, they made all of the equipment, as well as kind of owning HMV as a retail outlet. So they owned it all the way through. But there was the way we got the name Abbey Road Red, even there was a department called REDD, Research and Development Department. And they were looking at modern technology. You know, surround sound was invented by one of the EMI engineers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so Alan Blumlein is the guy who invented surround sound and actually invented it decades before it was actually kind of available to consumers. And there are all of these kind of pointers all the way through our history where EMI engineers, or indeed just by artists trying to break the rules and do something really different with tape machines, kind of came up with new ways of making music or new ways of stretching technology. So there's this, the creative process has actually hugely informed how the technology is involved in the studio. And that hadn't gone away. And so I actually had a lot of people, I've been at Abbey Road 4 years. And when I went in, there were a lot of people really keen to do something again. And, you know, gone are the days when you can just invent it yourself and have an R&D team. So we thought the most interesting way and actually the most helpful way to do it was to engage a startup community and try and bring this amazing technology back into the studio. And I think the really kind of life-affirming and assuring thing is that artists are really interacting with it when they do come in, and we kind of have a box of tricks that we can wheel out, which is good.
That sounds so amazing.
Yeah.
I want to go back. So you've been there for 4 years. How does one become managing director at the Abbey Road Studios?
I don't know. I wish I had like this linear route that I could explain that it was all part of a master plan since I was 18. I had been in the music industry for about, I guess, 12 years or so.
Okay.
I started my life back in the day. It's part of my history. I tried to like bury because it's not very cool.
Okay. But
I was
safe environment to bring it back out.
I was in finance for about 7-8 years.
Okay.
And then made a very serendipitous move into music.
Right.
And I grew up in the industry as technology actually became a massive threat to the industry, where, you know, we were at the height of Napster and illegal downloads. And Apple had just launched iTunes as I started in the music business. And actually being a young person in a hugely disrupted industry kind of almost worked to my advantage, because there were new positions and jobs people hadn't imagined that were suddenly opened up. So I kind of worked my way through at EMI Moved on to Warner Music.
What kind of tech roles were you doing at that point then, at EMI?
So when at EMI, when I went in first, I was actually working for the then CEO and chairman of the music side of the business. Mm-hmm. And his question to me was, right, digital is now 1% of the business. Mm-hmm. What are we going to look like when it's 50%?
Okay.
Which was not an easy question to answer at that stage.
And tell me what the lottery numbers are next week.
Yeah, exactly. But that was, you know, everyone saw it coming. We just didn't quite know how it was going to manifest itself.
Yeah.
And so I worked in that role kind of thinking more strategically about how digital was going to impact the business and how we set, more importantly, how we staffed up and kind of got teams ready to deal with it. Okay. And then the natural evolution was then that I went into a business development role in digital for EMI globally. Mm-hmm. And I did that for about a year or 18 months. And then I was headhunted across to Warner Music.
It's funny to think that you were kind of fighting, not fighting, I guess fighting is a hard word to say, but when they tell the story of how it's all happened, it does sound like a battle or like a war almost between the technology and the music.
Yeah.
So it's funny to think that you were there kind of in the middle trying to...
It was a really interesting time. I think it was the Napster and illegal downloads hit the industry, you know, pretty right hard. In the face.
Yeah.
But then I think the industry reacted pretty quickly. It was just how quickly we went from album downloads to essentially a singles world with a 99 pence iTunes download. Mm. And then the world shifted again to streaming. And, I was on the team at Warner negotiating that first Spotify deal they moved out of Sweden. So we were trying to do the European deal. And it was, you know, it was frustrating for everybody, technology company and record labels. But it was hard to fathom at that stage because you thought, God, we've just like the CD is, you know, in decline. We've now got downloads. Yeah. It's looking good again. And now here comes streaming that's possibly going to cannibalize downloads. And what are we going to do? And, you know, we wanted to do the deal, but it was just everything was moving so fast. But the deal did get done.
Do you think the technologists had an idea of what was coming? Do you think they were in some way they were, you know, they had the upper hand. They were a bit more in control than maybe the music?
No, I don't know. I think at that stage it had all aligned again. I mean, ultimately Spotify doesn't work without the rights. So, they kind of need each other. I think what was really good in the Spotify example in particular was Sweden was almost like the ultimate case study.
Okay.
So, you know, the reason I can't remember the numbers now, but, you know, they did a deal with the major national internet provider. Mm-hmm. And so they were part of the broadband offering almost. Okay. So it presented a picture of where we are today, essentially, which is, you know, imagine every home having super high powered broadband.
Exactly.
Imagine mobiles that can, you know, do the same.
Yeah.
And actually all you want is your entire library in your pocket. And you know what? This still at scale, this works.
Mm.
So there was kind of a case study there. It was just persuading the rest of the world that actually Sweden could replicate everywhere. Yeah. But no, I think there was definitely a stage where the industry was behind, but I think we caught up quickly. But it was just, how much do you adjust and what's, you know.
How far do you allow someone to do bits and pieces?
Yeah,
I think the other whispers or the other conversation has been, you know, we're never going to be paid the same. The money's never going to be made the same. And at the end of the day, you know, as much as we love music, sometimes we have to pay rent and pay mortgages and pay for food. So I think that's the other thing that still, for me, looks like something where there's still not really a happy agreement in this is the way that artist is going to make money or that record is going to make money.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, that's a very politically tricky one to answer.
Hard-hitting questions here on the Women Tech Charge podcast.
I think now that we're in a world of at scale and streaming, I think it's starting to simmer down and there are definitely tweaks that the industry has responded to make sure that artists are paid correctly. But I think in all of this debate, people forget that actually the amount of people watching on YouTube rather, which is a whole, I'm not of that generation, but there's a whole generation that have grown up and are coming on YouTube. And that's not a paid for environment.
Exactly.
And yet we vilify Spotify or whoever else, you know, so I don't know. I think it'll find its equilibrium at the end of the day. The world needs music. We need artists. We want them to be able to kind of sustain themselves. And so the industry and, well, everyone is kind of working towards that, and technology is working towards that.
Cool. So you were leading the charge, you're on the front of the battlefield on this.
Yeah.
At Warner.
Yeah.
Then how do we go from that kind of, because it's quite a different setup, yeah, back to running a studio.
Yeah. So I left Warner and then did some kind of consulting on my own. And you learn a bit about yourself when you work on your own. And I'm not very good at working on my own, is the conclusion.
Great team player. Yeah. Great leader.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. Was right for that time in my life. But I need people. And I'm definitely kind of like to bounce ideas off people. So you learn. I actually got a phone call. I'm very lucky. Through my life, I've had some good phone calls. And I got a phone call saying Universal are looking for someone to run Abbey Road Studios.
No way. Did you know the person? Did it sound like a prank?
No, it was a proper... I knew the headhunter. I was this is legit.
Okay.
I initially said, no, I'm not going back to a major record label, because ultimately Abbey Road's owned by Universal.
Mm.
And they said, no, you've got to hear them out. They have great plans and, you know, they want a really entrepreneurial approach to this amazing brand. I was like, really? Okay, I'll go and see them.
and
the rest is history.
There we go.
Yeah. You don't turn down a job at Abbey Road Studios.
How much free rein did they give you over putting together something like Abbey Road Red?
A massive free rein.
Okay.
I think that when I arrived there, there were a few things on the strategic agenda that we agreed with and were going ahead anyway. But no, Red was something we kind of dreamed up ourselves and got great support from the get-go.
Yeah. And mechanically, how does Red work? So do people, because with an incubator, normally people have the idea already, have the company already, or early stages, they apply for a process, they maybe get funding, they maybe get space.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is mirrored in the Abbey Road Red program itself?
We're very careful to say we're an incubator, not an accelerator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we take a small amount of equity from the companies that join us. And what makes us unique is we put a completely bespoke program around the businesses that we take on board. We don't take very many. We take 5 or 6 a year.
Right.
And the businesses that we do pick, then we build a very bespoke program around them with our own Abbey Road people mentoring the businesses, but also we've a huge extended mentor network. So, you know, whether you want marketing advice or brand advice or, you know, deep tech advice, we have all the resources to pull on. And we work with them intensively over the 6-month period. Obviously, we also give them our brand platform to shout about their technology.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we want to prepare them and help them to get the program is 6 months long, at the end of the 6 months to be ready for a financing round so that they're kind of ready to go to the next level.
Yeah.
And then once a year we do an event, we call it a demo day, but essentially where they kind of pitch their technology to a room full of music industry types, financiers, marketeers, anyone again that's going to help them on the rest of their journey.
Just to level up and scale up.
Yeah.
What kinds of technology do you ask for? What types of technology do you get?
We've had a really eclectic mix, actually. We don't have any kind of preconceived ideas of what technology we're looking for.
Yep.
So we're kind of following market trends to a degree. And then I think there are certain technologies that will gravitate towards us.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, we're in a particularly kind of AI-driven cohort,
mm-hmm.
but we have had a hardware where, you know, there are people manufacturing earphones and they were trying to replicate true immersive audio in the headphone, which is very hard to do.
Okay.
We've had businesses that do, what am I trying to say? Mastering, but computer mastering, where you don't need a person. So algorithmically driven mastering. And we've had a business called Crates that did a direct to vinyl. So you could send your recording off and they would put it onto vinyl for you. But the vinyl's expensive. The beauty of their business model was you could just pick 20, design your own artwork and send it to all your friends.
You also mentioned AI there, so artificial intelligence, which I think is something that fascinates people. So AI is fascinating in itself. People, you know, robots making decisions on things without us interacting. I talk about AI often in the talks that I give, and always give certain examples. So I always show the example of DeepMind, where they taught it how to play Brick Breaker.
Yeah.
and kind of people was gobsmacked by that. And I talk about Do Not Pay, which mm-hmm. is the kind of AI parking ticket type platform where if you get a parking ticket, it will kind of write your appeal letter for you. But the other one I always show is Ava.
Yeah.
And the video I show is it's a big human orchestra playing this music that's really rousing, really exciting. And I think it's like National Luxembourg Day or something. Yeah, yeah. And I say to people, you know, who has, what's the name of the composer of this piece of music? And they sit there and they're like, and you can see them being like, is it this? No, maybe it's not. Oh, no, move that way. And it's Ava, which is this artificial intelligence virtual assistant, I think they've called it. How much of that sort of thing do you see coming through?
We're seeing more and more of that come through now. And again, in different guises.
Mm.
But yeah, it's definitely what was the prevailing trend of 2018. I'm sure it'll continue into 2019.
Yeah. Oh, AI itself, mm-hmm. just for you. What sorts of stuff have you had coming through?
So we've had everything from we had Vocalia, which is a business that creates actually hardware into one degree, in that there's a microphone that you can beatbox into. But what it's actually doing is machine learning your voice. The pitch for Vocalia is you've been using your voice for your entire life. It's the one instrument you know how to play. It's funny talking about this because it always makes me do my trumpet noise. But, you know, you can go burr, 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 into the microphone and it knows you're attempting to do to make a trumpet sound, and will convert it into what's called a MIDI file, which is essentially, an electronic version of the trumpet.
Yeah.
And there you go. There's your trumpet sound, and you can layer up and up, and you have another sound that you make that's a guitar, and you can essentially compose on this microphone. And this microphone is learning you, so my trumpet sound won't be the same as your trumpet sound. And so,
although we sound very trumpet-like, that sounded very trumpet-like. Yeah.
Thank you. I've been practicing. So we have that kind of, you know, kind of more, I guess, tangible AI, in that you can kind of see it and you get feedback straight away.
Mm.
We have another business called HumTap, which is kind of more consumer facing AI. And it's not dissimilar to what you've just described with Ava or how you say it.
Mm.
In that you hum or you tap into on your mobile phone, and it is doing all of the same thing as Ava is doing on a much more simple level. So it's listening to the tone and the pitch that you're delivering into the device, and then actually translating that into a composition. And essentially the computer is composing based on some pieces of input
we
you give it.
We should try that on the podcast.
We should try
it. We should give that a try, actually.
I bet we'll be really good.
I know. Maybe this will be where we quit our job and announce Isabel and Amria touring.
Yeah. With our robots.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got all the connections anyway.
But yeah, so we have that. And then, you know, our most recent intake is a business called LifeScore, which actually isn't at scale yet, where it's using AI, but you can see how it plays out. It's actually founded by a composer. And what he's doing is he's teaching the computer. He describes it as Lego box, which I think is a great way to think about it. He teaches the computer the kind of almost compositional rules. If you think of a piece of music as blocks building, what rules would you put around it to make sure that your composition keeps moving? So he's about generative composition that just keeps going. And so at scale, the AI then has to make all of those kind of connections itself.
So if you say you want it like a 2-day long piece of music, it will make a 2-day long. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it can interact with them. So if you want it to interact with your gyroscope and it changes depending on whether you're facing north or south or the weather. I mean, this is the way the world is going, we're told, is that, you know, we'll have much more adaptive, reactive music.
Oh, wow.
Hmm. You know, you and I have spoken about this before. It can appear kind of slightly scary and, oh God, are the computer's going to start composing things? And that sounds, you know, it just sounds a bit
chip tune.
Yeah. And actually, these technologies will, you know, either provide a fun, like HumTap, a fun outlet where, you know, I'm not particularly gifted at playing any instrument, but, you know, suddenly I can kind of lay a tune down and make my fame and fortune. To, you know, Ava or any of those where they're actually serving as kind of compositional aids, or like, you know, if you have slight writer's block in the studio, like if only I could think of a, you know, a chorus to go with my verse or whatever it may be, that actually being able to whip out you know, any kind of compositional AI driven tool that you kind of go, oh, actually, there's a few ideas. I think I'll work on something like that. And you either do it yourself or you use the thing that the computer came up with.
So that's AI overlapping with, with music. What other things are you seeing, or what are you hoping to see? Because I think AI is one of those trends that is so broad. There's so many things that can count as AI. I can say that AI, but then there are so many other things of the options, I guess, if you're talking about physical computing. Are there any other trends that you're hoping to see overlap with music in future cohorts, perhaps?
Yes.
What do you want to see?
It probably does come back to AI in some shape or form. Like, I think, you know, the obvious one is the lyrical aids, which again aren't kind of new, but in songwriting, if you can get the technology to actually help you with the composition, can you then help it with writer's block around lyrics? And that's not new. Like, I think David Bowie even used a verbalizer, I think it was called, but it was a quick and dirty kind of computer program he used based on artists. I can't remember which artist it was now, but they used to cut out words from the newspaper, throw them up in the air, and then kind of see how they land. Like, really? It's literally a randomizer of kind of words and sentences to just, you know, jog your mind. In fact, we ran a hackathon in November, and the winner was a business called Rapple that rapped back at you in context. So, yeah, it's coming. But that would be interesting. And I think then we are obviously, being a studio, we always love a good bit of tech that is about the kind of the old format of music making, but possibly using technology. Like, a colleague was telling me the other day about a business he found that is has created almost a drumstick that will play any surface, right? So you can kind of start to get really cool sounds, and it digitizes it. So there's all sorts of like funky things that are coming out, but there's no one big thing that we think, gosh, if only we had that. I think we're being kind of hit from
I think the nice thing is that it is all about the creativity of it all. And I think more than possibly any of the other kind of themes that we might have been able to explore actually on the podcast, this is something where you're not building tech necessarily to completely solve a problem and end something happening. You're building technology to help humans do something,
Which
I think, I mean, I don't want to say, you know, I'm picking a favorite, but I think there's something quite noble about helping extend human endeavor rather than just trying to solve a problem.
I think it's exactly that. And there's a lot of, you know, as with any technology, there's a lot of stuff that's happening in the studio that actually, if you could take the very rudimentary stuff away with technology, that frees up, because the people in the studio are creative geniuses, you know, so if they can actually spend their time focusing on the more kind of making and the creative stuff rather than the mundane task of checking EQ or whatever on a track, then that's a good thing. I don't know if I go as far as saying it's noble, but I think I definitely buy into a future where, you know, certainly we believe studios will still be relevant. People are, you know, why do we connect with artists? We connect with them because of their music and because of their lyrics, and we can relate to them as people. So I don't see I can't imagine myself at a concert with robots. I might go for the novelty value.
What, mosh putting next to robots or watching the robots sing?
Watching the robots sing, Yeah. But, you know,
I think that would be kind of cool to go to once.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll be on their 10th tour.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So you've done a lot of different things and seen a lot of different things in the music industry. What has stayed constant in your time of everything you've seen, all the roles you've done?
Mm.
What's something that you, not that you hope won't change, but that hasn't changed?
The creativity is the simple. Yeah, I mean, and that's, look, why am I still in the music industry? I absolutely love that combination of creativity and, you know, commercially trying to get it out there.
Mm.
And, you know, that there are two viewpoints that don't necessarily always agree with each other. So there's always a nice tension, a kind of a happy tension. And I love that because I did work in an industry full of A-type people and everyone thought the same as me. And I love being in an industry exposed to so many different brains and so many creative people. And that just hasn't changed. I mean, through all of the disruption, the one constant was that people still want really good music and you need the people to go find it and nurture it. Mm. And That hasn't changed.
I mean, that is the other thing I always say. I mean, as much as you might have the robots making some of this music, they're not listening to it.
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
We still need to be part of that equation somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Enjoy the music. They're not doing that instead of us. So you kind of grew up with technology. You weren't trained in it specifically.
Mm.
How do you keep up to date with what those tech trends would be, or even just the technology itself? So like the basis of what's happening behind the scenes.
I think I have a natural curiosity for it. Okay. But also, I guess I've lived it. It's been easy because the at the core of my role was this kind of big disruptor and what was going on. And you can't, I don't think you can be successful without understanding it at some level. I mean, I can name you a few coding languages. I have no idea how to code. Mm. Although if you sent me to a desert island, I think I'd just go learn how to code. it appeals to the geek in me. But in terms of staying on top of the trends, I mean, obviously I have people who are living and breathing it with Red every day. So I kind of suck as much information out of them as possible. Yeah. And then I just read what's out there. I think it's very well covered. And actually, I think it's kind of come out of that very masculine kind of geeky kind of reportage. I think it's actually... it's done very well now where it's easy to kind of connect with what's going on. And there's always a human interest story around it. It's not just about ones and zeros.
So, and you mentioned kind of the masculine side of things. Mm. I think that's the other thing that's really funny. So we've worked together previously on stuff looking at music and tech and women and girls in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember initially, so we did it with Telefonica O2, the mobile network. And I remember originally them putting together the press release for it all and putting out the numbers and saying, I think it's something like 11% of music producers are women. And in technology, it's 17% of those working in tech are women. So it's a bit like, yeah, this is an industry that's slightly worse, I guess, on this side of things. How much do you feel like women are missing, especially in something like music tech versus music versus technology? And what is that meaning for us and our enjoyment of the industry?
Yeah. So I think in music, in its broader sense, certainly on the kind of the major label side, it's actually coming up to speed quite quickly. Mm-hmm. It wasn't when I started, but it's not quite 50-50, but it's getting closer, although there aren't enough women
in terms of artists, you mean?
No, just people working in the industry. But it's not there aren't enough senior women.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you start boiling it into kind of artists and everything, it's probably 50-50, but who's getting most of the airplay and concert headlines? And that's the debate kind of raging at the moment.
Mm.
And then if you look at technology, I have to hold my hand up and say, I haven't found a female founder yet. And, we are out there scouting for businesses. And
she's listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I hope she is, because I would love...
Isabel's waiting for you.
Yeah, I'd love to have one. You know, the businesses themselves that we... that have been through our incubator have had good balances of men and women working in them, although not very many women coders.
Yeah.
But no, I still haven't found the female founder. And then if you go into music production, which is more on the studio side, it is terrible. As you said, it's worse than technology. We do not have enough women. And actually, I'm going to use this podcast. I want to shout out to those women producers and engineers out there, because I think it's a lack of visibility, because there are amazingly talented women in the industry and in production and engineering. But I don't think young girls have visibility on them. And it's engineering and producing are kind of slightly obscure jobs themselves, even, you know, for men and women. So how do we kind of shout about it as a really amazing career with big opportunity? And then obviously with my female hat on, how do we make more girls aware of it? It is about opening that up, particularly in the creative industries that are hopefully going to thrive in this era of technology, because it's what makes us fundamentally human. So you can imagine more roles. In fact, I had someone joke to me the other day that they could imagine themselves in 20 years' time sitting down with their kids saying, "Now, son, or now, daughter, I'd like you to make sure you study music as well as your law degree, so that you have something to fall back on." So how the tables turn?
Lawyers pluck your ears. And so that's takes up most of your time.
Yes.
It's quite funny to think, I mean, do you find it stressful? I mean, are there really stressful days that you have? Or is every day just like, you know, being in a music video?
I don't really know what comment, to do with that.
I mean, what do you do to relax, basically, is where I'm going. Okay. Do you need to relax often?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you do to relax?
My days are very full. I don't know. I think running is my relaxing thing.
Okay.
That makes me sound like a fitness crazy. I'm not.
Why
but,
not?
You know, that's the time when I actually have some time to myself. I have young kids. I don't really do time to myself. But yeah, I'll do that, or I'll sit with friends. I think there's nothing a good natter can't solve.
Yeah. And chillaxing. Which I was very impressed, actually, at the studios. You have your own bar, cafe.
Yes, we do. We're very good at keeping that bar well stocked.
Who's the coolest person you've had at the studios that you can tell us?
See, I, being Irish, I've got a big U2 fangirl thing. So it was definitely, for me, it was meeting Bono. But okay. I mean, no disrespect to anyone else who's been through the doors. But I'm lucky I get to meet a lot of very fun people the whole time.
So we're going to demo the Hum Tap, because I like the idea of this okay. one. And in theory, if this song is any good, then we'll use it as the
we're
trailer.
We're going to retire.
Yes, we'll retire. If not, then it will just be released on this podcast. And it will be on Apple
okay.
podcasts. Yeah. So that's how we've released it. So it's Hum Tap. It's available on all good app stores, iOS and Android. Free to download. Internationally, I guess.
Yep.
So anyone that listens can play along at home. And when you load it up, you get this carousel of different types of music. So I can choose an Arabic music. I can choose synth, 80s synth pop, which sounds quite hilarious. EDM hip hop or EDM 2. You have recommended that I choose EDM.
I think this is where you're going to make your money.
No comment on the state of EDM at the moment. I've read loads of articles on this, actually. Okay, right. So I'm going to tap EDM and then you tap Let's Go. So I'm going to tap Let's Go. The screen goes black. Get ready to rock. And then it wants me to hum. So I'm going to record my melody. I'm going to hold. And I'm going to... I don't know if EIO is what I should base it on. What's a better one? Maybe not EIEIO. Gosh, the choice is killing me.
Do you want to go Twinkle Twinkle? Are we in nursery rhyme
twinkle,
land?
Twinkle Twinkle Little Star is the same as... No, it's not. Twinkle Twinkle is the same as... ABC.
Yeah. There's all a man right. who knows where's your rhymes.
Okay, so we're going to go with Twinkle Twinkle, a.k.a. ABCD. Okay. ABC, right? So I'm going to hold ABCDEFG. Close enough, I guess. I don't know. Maybe not. Close enough. All right. So I tap the tick. And then now I'm going to have to keep a beat. Oh. So you make a beat. I feel like that guy. What's that guy with the big hair? That has the loop. What's his name? Don't know. He's on... He's really cool anyway. So they have like a, he has like a loop machine. So that's this next stage is the loop. So you've got a red dum and a aqua dum. Yeah. So that's what you can hear on the song. And then I can choose my speed. I can speed it up. So at the moment it's 120 BPS. Yeah, I don't know what beats per second. There we go. All the lingo. I'm going to speed it up. So now it's 130, so it's a little bit faster, which works. And then I'm going to tap the red tick. Sounds legit. It's a 59 second song that I've just made.
You can put some singing
don't
over
say
the top.
Vocals Come now. On. I'm not going to put vocals. What would I even sing?
Isn't there an underwater robot or something? It's quite fun to do. Yeah.
Well, I can change the volume. I can change the speed. So I'm going to ramp it up right to 140. And everyone is bopping their head. That's how I know it's a tune. I'm going to quit my job. Oh my goodness. It's happening. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Isabel Garvey of Abbey Road, Red and Studios and Institute. Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
I'm so excited for the future.
No, it is. It's very exciting.
You can find Abbey Road on Twitter at Abbey Road and Instagram at Abbey Road Studios.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.